All right, Henry, we're back. Topic number three.
Critical pleasure theory.
I don't know if I've ever heard a talk on critical pleasure theory.
Well, in the history of the world, in the world of philosophy, it's called like Epicureanism. But I mean, today it is clearly the critical pleasure theory, the dominant theory that is everywhere.
Yes. So everything relates to pleasure.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about real quick. Yeah. Pleasure, not just pleasure in that you feel good after you eat, or in marriage you've had sexual relations, there's pleasure, but it's actually like rooted like deep within, like our life is so short, eat, drink to be merry, for tomorrow we die. It's
right.
Not just
right.
That it is an entire worldview,
yes,
of pleasure.
Right. Those with the power tend to maximize their own pleasure at the expense of others. So that would be like the critical pleasure theory.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. The critical side of that,
So that it's unfair, and it's demonstrated all throughout culture. So within families sometimes, you know, one family member is doing everything that they want to do at the expense of others, or sometimes in a marriage. Marriages sometimes don't work out because, you know, each one is seeking their own pleasure and not the pleasure of the other.
Right. And what's happening is the critical pleasure theorists, they wouldn't call themselves but through the injustices and the inequalities of things, this is sort of like an add-on theory that it's often like put in with another one. So like you'll have like rich white men who can have jets and have islands and have this exotic life, but it also relates to like other inequality theories, even like women's rights. So here's an example where the critical pleasure theory marries the equality debate about women's rights, for instance.
Right.
It's very fascinating how these tend to combine together sometimes. Yeah.
So current social manifestations, because there's many of them.
Yes.
But the one we were
on demand abortion. Okay, very good. On demand abortion.
So we're probably going to have to unpack how this relates to our topic, critical
pleasure theory.
What does abortion have to do with that?
Well, I know Margaret Sanger, in the 1930s, wrote about how women were not allowed to experience the same quality of life and pleasures that men were having because they were forced to bear children.
Yeah, a lot was at stake for them.
Right.
Right. So they're going to get this child that now they have to deal with the rest of their life, whereas the man was like free to do whatever he wants and experience things and then move on. The woman was not.
So contraception in all of its various forms. And then I know that what happened in the 1960s in America is they saw the social justice, they made it a social justice issue of back alley abortion. But first it was the plausibility that a child should be eliminated if that child got in the way of a woman's happiness.
Right. And again, it's not just the woman's happiness, but the unfairness that the man gets to be free and be happy and the woman doesn't.
That's interesting.
So the basic arguments going on in our culture, we have the right to life argument. Every human being has a God-given right to life, including the unborn. And then the right to choose argument, women have been abused by men for most of human history because they have the burden of bearing and often caring for the children. It is a woman's body, and she should have the right to do with it as she pleases.
So there's the conflicting, that's the conflict side of this theory here.
Yes.
Hmm.
Okay. So there's always been the dilemma of personal choice and how that choice affects others.
Well, on this issue, you can certainly see that. So if a life was created in a woman's womb, and then as a contraception mean that life was taken away, it would seem like an injustice occurred to someone there.
Yeah.
I mean, and to even laugh about that seems
right.
sad.
Right.
I mean,
right.
this is like kind of an intellectual aha laugh. I mean,
but,
really.
But we all understand that there is this dilemma. For example, you have the right to do whatever you want with your body. So in other words,
right.
you can smoke.
Right.
Even though it's detrimental to your body, you have the right to do that. But, at least in the United States, you do not have the right to smoke in a restaurant.
Or
in
a, yeah.
And why?
Or in a train.
Because
a
your personal right to do whatever it is you want to is limited when it affects the right of someone else.
Hmm.
See, that's where the conflict is. So if I have the right, if I, as a, let's say I'm a woman and I have the right to do what I want with my body, that right is not absolute. It's limited by... It, you know, by me exercising that right without hurting anyone else.
Right.
So this is where people that are pro-life say, well, you can't have an abortion without hurting the unborn child.
But how could you go there to, I mean, a life, a baby, even young?
I mean, how does this even happen?
Yeah, I mean,
like, how can a woman have the right to kill an innocent human being in the name of personal choice? How is that even possible that we could? How is that even possible that we could have arrived here?
Yeah,
that, I guess that's what's, you know, for those of us that are in the right to life world,
you've got to find a theory.
Yeah.
There has to be a why I can abort a baby theory, yeah. and there must be.
Well, and you know, if people would watch a video on an abortion, there's no way that you can see that this is not a human being.
Right. Well, yeah. And I know from Christian leaders, college and institute students, hundreds have come to Christ,
yeah.
and they had an abortion.
Right.
And the consensus that we clearly see in testimonies after testimonies after testimonies written with these women who did not know Christ even
right.
at the time,
right.
and somehow they got an abortion, and the agony,
yeah.
and how Jesus Christ forgave them, and they knew that it that they took a life.
Right.
They knew it was killing.
Yeah.
Again, so it's so interesting how clinical it becomes in the news media, but right. the self-evident observation
yes.
of the irresistible self-evident observation of the people that we see.
Right.
If we did a scientific study, it would be there was a consensus that was a life.
Yes.
So how is it possible
right.
that social sciences can spin this in another way?
Yes. So that's the, so how can a woman have the right to kill an innocent human being in the name of personal choice? Number one, this is one way that the culture has used to sort of justify it. The question of the humanity of the unborn. We call a unborn child a fetus.
A fetus, yeah.
So it's not, but again, if you watch a video of a real abortion, that fetus looks a lot like an unborn child, right? So it's still...
Yeah.
That alone does not...
It's a pre-born human.
Yeah. So it seems like this one isn't enough to get us...
And here, too, I noticed like the social justice angle on that. Well, what about the cases of rape and incest? You know, right away, those exceptional cases, which are a small percentage of them, mm-hmm. but we Christians could not say, well, in the case of rape or incest, because we're convicted that each child is an image bearer.
Right.
But if we were to say, well, let's just say, okay, rape and incest were okay, which we would not say, the fact is to make it a social justice issue seems a little bit hypocritical.
Yeah. Well, and
but who's justice?
Right. Right.
Is there
yeah.
pre-born baby justice?
Right. Yeah. The most innocent, the one
defenseless,
who is defenseless.
Totally.
If anyone is a victim, the lowest that you can possibly go
right.
on the victim scale, defenseless, has no voice, it would be the unborn.
Right.
I mean, we save whales, but we, you know,
right.
we have a problem with unborn children.
Right. Yeah, it's difficult.
Okay.
Well,
If there is, so I think the question of the humanity of the unborn just isn't a very good one at all. I don't think that's what sells.
Right.
I don't think that's what justifies anything. I don't think it helps anybody.
No.
But I think it's number two. If there is no God, then as Paul writes, you know, and when he's talking about the resurrection, if there is no resurrection, let's eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die, right?
Right.
So I think what has happened is the whole sexual experience has become a physical recreational sport.
Right. And back to Margaret Sanger and many others in the 30s, I mean, even A.F. Hitler, how he thought about eugenics and all of these things. I mean, this is all in our history within 100 years ago.
Right. So it really boils down to, again, pleasure. That it's just a thing that gives you pleasure or not pleasure. And so if that's all it is, and that's all, if there is no God, then this is all I have.
Right.
There's no heaven. So pleasure is about as close to heaven as I can possibly get.
So I got to seize.
So I got to grab
every happiness,
and
every pleasure.
If something is stopping me from the one piece of heaven that I could maybe get,
right?
Then somehow I got to get past it.
So my life, my happiness, is all that matters.
Yeah.
The unfairness for women to have to bear the consequences for the bad effects of a strictly recreational activity that men can participate without consequences.
So, I think that's what justifies it in people's minds, that this is a pleasure, and pleasure is all that there really is. So that's why it's pleasure, critical pleasure theory,
right?
Because it says everything is pleasure.
Right.
And if I can't get the one thing that there is because of this unfair thing.
Right.
And now abortion is like my last stand that can help me get it or not get it.
Right.
And now you're going to say I can't do that.
Right.
So then it becomes a women's rights issue. And then how do you argue, especially as men? Here we are, men, speaking against this. And who are we to speak? We're the people that take advantage and so on. So
we're the ones that have no consequences if we chose to do that.
Right. So then you can't speak to it.
And right.
So, all right. What's the answer here?
It's a dilemma.
Okay, this leads to this dilemma. Many women want the consequence of a free sex life, as they believe men have. So abortion takes away the negative consequences, but because of that, men take even less responsibility for their actions.
Oh, come on. So you're saying men even become more rotters in this world?
Yeah, because now in their mind, yes, sex is just a physical recreational activity. It's not tied to any real consequences.
Right.
And if the woman doesn't prepare herself, then she can always have an abortion.
Hmm. I'm interested in the critical grace theory understanding of pleasure so forth.
So again, everything relates to grace. There is a righteous God. We are sinners in need of grace. Once we have received grace and become forgiven children of the King, we are in the kingdom. Part of what it means to be in the kingdom is to procreate, thus elevating sex to an incredibly purposeful, pleasurable, and meaningful level.
Okay. So what you're saying, then, is that God created pleasure in a place that blesses us and blesses our culture, not in a place that disenfranchises and hurts our culture.
Right. So in our culture, we let men off the hook. They can have sex and procreate all they want, and then they can not take on responsibility. We have women who can now have an abortion if they become pregnant, and therefore we have this space where sex is just a recreational sport, and none of it is meaningful, right?
Right.
None of it ties people together or helps people make something important out of it.
Right.
So it's become a total mess. Right? It doesn't bring people together. It separates people.
Right. You know, what's fascinating is, since we are undeserving of grace, we don't run around seeing how we are missing out. We don't dwell on how unfair things might seem to be. We realize that we've been blessed with the honor of creating as God did Adam and Eve, or if you're a single man or woman, the worldview of creating. What does that mean, Steve?
Right. So, right now, because sex, there is no God. All there is pleasure.
Right.
And so sex is just one of those pleasure experiences, and we need to do all we can do to maximize it. With critical grace theory, no, there's a God.
Right.
And there is righteousness, and there is a need for his, you know, there's sin, and that's why there's
right.
brokenness in relationships.
And abuse.
Men taking
abuse, rape,
advantage.
All those things.
All those things. But God, the grace that God created this sexual experience within the confines of a marriage
right.
to reflect him.
Right.
He gives us this incredible honor. I mean, God created the first two individuals, and he let us do the rest.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's an incredible honor that we're, you know, that we're not taking advantage of.
And since we have purpose as children of God, we do not need to eat and drink and be merry as a life goal.
Right. So now pleasure is not the one thing that we're going after.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we can deal with things that are hard, and we can, you know, you have five children, I have four children, and it wasn't always easy.
Right.
But what an honor to be a part of it, and it's still not easy, and the grandchildren, all those things that God let us be a part of. But we honor that, and we, mm-hmm. you know, we take responsibility for that. Not the other side is not taking responsibility for it.
Right. I often think about the word joy, that, you know, the absolutization of pleasure, eat, drink, and be merry, maybe for a human, for their senses, can give the illusion of something greater.
Yeah.
And that is, the joy of the Lord right. is our strength.
Right.
So I can enjoy marital sexuality, pleasurable. But deeper than the sexual experience itself is the joy of the Lord in that marriage.
Right.
In that, you know, we're coming on to almost 38 years at the time of this taping, and that's fascinating to see that.
Yeah.
Pleasure. I mean, I can eat food, but I know that if I eat too much,
right.
It ultimately hurts
right.
me.
Right.
So, you know, and I know that I have a brother-in-law who just retired as a emergency room nurse for 40 years of fighting that battle, and then became a supervisor. And he said in the last several years now, maybe call it 10, is there's becoming a huge obesity problem mm-hmm. where the hospital must get special tools mm-hmm. to move people
right.
And they're young. He says, this isn't like somebody
right.
who's 50 or 60.
Right.
But he says, when he talks with people, he's not critical. He's the most compassionate man.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most compassionate men I've met in my brother-in-law. And they talk the theory. Look, this is all there is. I don't want to get necessarily
right.
old. I just want to live
right.
now.
I want to enjoy what I can.
Right. And then there's at times where even with the whole legalization of drugs. And
mm-hmm.
So the pleasure is not merely connected to the abortion issue. We just took that issue
right.
as sort of like
right.
the key thing
right.
that we're going to talk about here. Like
right.
how could
right.
this
yeah.
one, my yeah. right for pleasure hurt
right.
another person's right.
right?
But we see that with drinking.
Yeah.
You know, if you drink and drive and,
yeah.
you know, and ultimately you don't exercise moderation anymore,
right.
So, you know, this is not something that we say, oh, that's just one issue. This is an all-encompassing
yeah.
issue, pleasure theory,
yeah.
and it really is the sinful nature.
Yes. And it's ultimately, if you seek pleasure as the ultimate God, you will not find the pleasure you seek.
Right.
The pleasure that you seek comes in a relationship with God, a pleasure in a marriage. The marriage is
yeah.
better because
yeah.
people are faithful.
Well, that's this passage about marriage, Genesis 2:26. That's why a man leaves his father and mother and is united with his wife, and they become one flesh. I mean, that's like powerful to
right.
think that two
right.
humans become one.
And, you know, in Genesis 1, in the creation of man, God says, let us
right.
the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Let us make man in our image. And then it takes two to reflect that image. And then in Genesis chapter 2, the two become one like the three in one.
Right.
So God allows us in this whole sexual experience to reflect the very image of God.
Right. So ministry. If you're dealing with someone that struggles with pornography, if you're dealing with someone who's had an affair, you're dealing with someone who has no self-control over alcohol or food, addictions. You're dealing with someone who is so into sports that that's their only pleasure. The endorphins of winning the pleasure game are all that matters. Yeah. You know, so in ministry now, you know, after you hear this, you can start saying, well, maybe we all are sort of...
Yeah. We're prone to this addiction.
We're prone to, you know, pick the addiction. We all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's easy for one person who's overcome one thing to look critically. Critical race theory, it's critical judgment theory on someone else who, you know, and somehow, and here's Satan too. I mean, look at the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
They looked at the tree and it was good for food. And then Satan,
and pleasurable.
Pleasurable to the eye. Did God really say? Yeah. And now here we are, the human condition.
Yeah.
And critical grace theory says no.
Right.
God looks at us as forgiven in Jesus Christ.
Right.
And we look at another forgiven in Jesus Christ. But the worldview we reject. If I fall victim to some of my own pleasurable shortcomings or whatever, I know that that is not my life.
Right.
And I remember when we grew up, we both came from similar churches. And every single week, Pam and I were talking about this, my wife Pam and I were talking about this weekend. Every single week, they read the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Okay? And sort of I did feel, quite honestly, beat up a little bit. Because how many of those for the sinful nature in the last week did I actually, I don't think I lied. Well, maybe, did I exaggerate? Did that form to be a lie? Or, you know, like Jesus says, you know, if you look lustfully at a woman, did I really commit adultery? I mean, or you grow up and most men and women have seen pornography, you know, and then most of us have lied. Most of us have, you know, we've gone against, you know, the worship of God and worship other things in our hearts.
Yeah.
And then, so my wife and I were talking about that, Steve, about how, then there's that. But then there was that place right after that, the call to confession, where, and I remember, you know, and I would, like, talk about them in prayer to the Lord, you know, and the Lord already forgave my sins in Jesus Christ. This is for my benefit, not to have a heavy weight.
Right.
And then there was the assurance of pardon.
Right.
You probably, if you confess your sin, He is faithful and just, will forgive your sins and purify you from all unrighteousness. You know, now I bring that out a lot because at the end of the day, the critical grace theory is to say God really knows your frame.
Right.
You know, He really knows that you have weaknesses in your flesh.
Right.
And He knows we all do.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we can start. Getting, you know, that's all that matters is me now.
Right.
So we don't adopt a worldview of the critical pleasure theory while we still are prone to sin.
In some ways, the critical grace theory gives us a way out of the addiction. Whereas if there was no grace, you're stuck.
But explain that further.
What else is there? You know, if I was into food and that was what gave me pleasure in my life, and there's nothing else, why would I get out of it? So people will say, you know what, I'd rather die young and eat poorly because this is the one thing that gives me pleasure.
Right.
Well, with grace, let's say I'm into food just the same. I love food, and that's a thing.
I do know you like, but, you really like, but, ice cream.
But, yes. But.
That would be your thing.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But grace gives me a way out of that. I can say, Lord, I don't want to be dominated by this. Please help me with this addiction. Help me to, you know, be more moderate and these things. In other words, there's some answer to it, and there's some way out. Where the other way, there's no way out.
Right. I'm still loved and accepted despite my human, sinful person.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think a very interesting topic. And now in ministry, I brought that up a little bit. I wanted you to comment on that. So how do you minister with this theory so prevalent? It's almost not talked about, but it's everywhere.
Yeah, how do you? I think, because, people get stuck in these addictions.
Right.
But I think a lot of times it's just the manifestation of the deeper problem.
Right.
So the deeper problem might be a lousy marriage. The deeper problem might be not a walk with God. The deeper problem might be not a sense of my call or my purpose or what gifts God gives.
So you're saying we'll get moralistic, but we scratch on the surface, but don't really fire someone up about. So we should do a marriage retreat,
right?
You know, just get married.
So in other words, it's not just about getting someone over a food addiction. Let's talk about food.
Yeah.
No, we got to talk about your whole life, because maybe food is just the surrogate thing, because the other things are missing.
Right. So in ministry, and that's why you're taking many of the classes.
Yeah.
If you are at CLI, is we're learning how to, you know, really become servants to help people grow in some of these areas. One more comment on that I think to myself is, don't be so hypocritical to think that you are not someone who fall victim to the critical pleasure experience.
Yes, we all struggle with these areas.
And maybe to be that gracious pastor who points to Jesus Christ, but Jesus Christ is pointed to in your own life, because you need a Savior.
And I still need Him.
I need Him now. Well, very good. I'm looking forward to this continued study.